All right, Jim Taylor on a Saturday morning. It's a playoff Saturday morning on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. Pleased to have Scott Munson, the head football coach at Sherrard, finishing up his second season. Good morning, Coach Munson. And I told you late in the regular season here in 2018, in 2019, the Tigers will be getting ready for a week. 10. I don't want to put the pressure on you, but let's. We can only hope for that. Thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here, and I almost broke into my Jim Mora when you started doing that. But I fought off the urge, and it's good that there's. We started building some excitement late in the season. That's for sure.
And you have to be a little envious this morning with local teams playing, and you hope that your kids are envious of those other teams playing.
Absolutely, and one of the kind of the assignments postseason is, guys, go watch some playoff football. Go get an idea of what it feels like to drive into a town that is hosting a playoff game and start thinking about that.
My opinion is you made strides this year. I think that's definitely noticeable, and I think that's indicative of when you say, well, we walked off the field this week or we walked off the field that week and we should have won these games. And you did win two this year, but you had multiple other opportunities to win games. And I know when you look back early in the season with, like, Morrison week one had a potential to get out of there with a win, and then St. Bede, that was week three. And then you're looking at, you know, stringing those two wins together against Kewaunee and Erie Prophetstown. That's four wins, potentially, with weeks 8 and 9 left.
Yeah.
So you can say you're not that far, but you are that far. Well, you can look at it two ways.
Exactly. And it's, you know, ifs and buts, you know, our time kind of things that can drive you crazy. But we weren't having those conversations last year. You know, there weren't a lot of could have, you know, situations there. And so we were competitive, certainly in 5 of the 9 games. I think you got to learn how to win. And I think that Morrison game and the St. Bede game was necessary in order to come out on top of the Kewaunee game.
Yeah, and I would say probably the biggest disappointment in the season was the loss at Riverdale. I felt that was a game that you were the favorite. You played in that end of the field the whole night. You fumbled the ball in the end zone. You had an 8-minute drive that you didn't score. I mean, it was just those type of things. And we always talk about the narrow margin there is, and especially when you're trying to turn the corner, you almost have to play 100% perfection. Yeah. And even if you play 95% or 90% or 75% perfection, when you're trying to turn things around, that's not good enough.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. You get these premonitions or sense of what a night might go like before a game, and I just had a real sinking feeling going to that game. Playing them in that offense is like playing a team that holds the basketball, you know, in a basketball game. And we just didn't hit on all cylinders. And again, you got to give Riverdale credit. They did what they needed to do, and they had some nice adjustments on defense. But, yeah, you walk away from that one saying, boy, we should have had that one.
All right. It was funny. I wanted to bring this up right off the bat. But last week when I was doing my pregame interview with you at Hall Township, we were talking a little bit about the playoffs, and I had told you. Well, I said, I did a – for a playoff show today, I did an interview with Coach with John K. Elder, who helped organize the playoffs back in 1974. And we know the massive structural changes in the playoff system that has occurred. And again, in 74, it was 5 classes, 16 teams per class, right? 80 qualifiers. And we were talking about, you know, how information was disseminated back then. It's not immediately digital access that, boom, they press the button.
Absolutely.
And, hey, here's the whole state that gets the pairings. It's like you get whatever the phone tree is,
yeah,
how
yeah.
that information is disseminated. And maybe you don't find out until, if you're lucky, maybe Sunday morning, maybe late Sunday afternoon, maybe Monday you'll find out.
And knowing you're going to have a game on Wednesday, yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing. So – was it
1979.
So yeah. At Winola, so you're going into the weekend after week 9, and you think, well, did we make the playoffs or not make the playoffs? And 8-1.
We were 8-1.
Eight and one.
Yeah.
So take me through that story again. In 19, so was there still 5 classes?
Still 5 classes. It was the last year of 5 classes.
So you're 8-1. And you're thinking about, well, are we in the playoffs? Or are we not in the playoffs?
Well, just again, to show you how things have shifted, we leave Weathersfield, beat a very good Weathersfield team. We're 8-1, and I just assumed the season was over. You know, I remember somebody had a banner on the sideline talking about a wild card and wild card position, but the coach never talked about it. It was never discussed, and there was only one wild card available. So I just thought the season was over. I remember coming home Saturday night and my mother telling me that I had practice tomorrow, and I didn't know what she was talking about. Well, there was a player from Hampshire that was IHSA was investigating that they might have been ineligible or played ineligible, so they would have had to forfeit X amount of games. It doesn't matter. And the IHSA was looking into it. So if Hampshire was out, then we were in. That would have meant Genoa Kingston would have been the conference champion, and then we were the wild card. So Sunday morning, we still didn't know. Got up. We had practice on Sunday afternoon. And then I remember about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, got the call from coach saying that we didn't get in. And so, you know, 8-1, we don't get in. And then I finished my high school career at a practice. You know, so there's just, you know, all kinds of oddities there.
Holy smokes, so you actually had a practice?
We practiced, yeah. And it was, I mean, because...
And what day did you find out that you weren't in?
Sunday afternoon. But we knew that if we got in, we were going to be playing Alexis because they were the Lincoln Trail conference champions, and they were the ones that had given us our one loss.
Because there were automatic qualifiers in and then at-large qualifiers,
yeah,
how the bracket worked.
Yeah, beginning of the season, your conference was deemed 1A, 2A, whatever. So you knew. And so there were certain amount of conferences, and then there was going to be one wild card. So we knew that if we got in to be wild card, we'd be playing Alexis on Wednesday night. We'd be going over there. So we were preparing to play Alexis. Yeah.
And, yeah, that you bring up the point about it being a Wednesday playoff game, too, the first round. Do you remember how crushing it was to find out that, well, man, pumped up, we're in the playoffs, and then you find out after practice, no, we're not.
Well, it was...
That's like a Friday Night Lights scene thing where they call you.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. It wouldn't have been so crushing because, like I said initially, I was done. I'd mentally prepared. I was moving on to basketball, and basketball practice was Monday. I do remember I wasn't very fired up about Monday basketball practice after thinking on Sunday afternoon that we might be playing football still.
Oh, man, what an unbelievable story.
It is. It was crazy.
Okay, so this is when I saw us looking back. So Winola, that would have been 1A or 2A, do you remember?
1A.
Okay. So what you remember, like in 79, 9 through 12 enrollment at Winola, what it would be?
I would guess somewhere to 300, 320. Okay.
So 320. Yeah. And I always like to talk about culture and demographics and what is happening in certain parts of Illinois. So you said Hampshire, right?
Yeah, yes.
Hampshire is now enrollment. You said Winola, 300, 325 high school enrollment. Sherrard probably 520 now with the annexation.
Probably, yeah.
Sherrard and Winola school.
Well, right now today, Sherrard is 460.
460.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
So enrollment at Winola was like 325. But enrollment at Hampshire now for people, they're located in King County, of course. Their 9 through 12 enrollment is 1,636.
Yeah. And Genoa Kingston.
So they became four or five. Yeah. They became 5 Winolas.
Exactly.
In 1979.
Yeah, it's crazy. And Genoa Kingston was the wild card team. And I know they played 1A several years. And I'm sure they're in the same neighborhood. I know they're for 4A school.
So, kid that grew up in the area, what do you think of the cultural change when you see stuff like that? I'm sure you get on Illinois HS. Well, the Illinois High School Glory Days website that has all the deactivated
yes.
schools, yeah. And it's a great site. It's IllinoisHSGloryDays.com. I mean, it's a great, and it's a site that basically is all from user contributions, mm-hmm. And you can't help sometimes. You understand being in education. What we're up against, and you understand why annexation occurs, other forms of school reorganization with consolidation, even co-ops. But do you long for those days a little bit? Now, I'm not going to get into this whole, you know, Winola. That was before my time when I got here, but that the wounds were still here with like the Winola-Alito debate and the Winola-Sherrard debate, and then I even think like Alwood got in, involved. I would have loved to have been around during that time, and I wish Twitter and social media.
Oh, yeah, that would have been fun.
That time. But do you, I mean, you have to, when you drive through the county roads and rural highways of Western Illinois, you can't help but long for those days a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, I was talking about our one loss being to Alexis. I still know a lot of those guys over there. They still mention that game a lot to me when they beat us 24-0. And the same thing, though, with guys from Alwood. I ran into a guy a few months ago and I didn't recognize him, and he mentioned, that's what's lost now. And I don't know that our kids are going to run into somebody from Peoria St. Bede, you know, in a coffee shop, a few years down the road. I just don't think those things are happening. And there was,
and they'll ask you,
yeah,
what's your nickname?
Exactly.
And for the people that don't hear that story, this is one of the gripes about me and I joke a lot about tongue-in-cheek about this Olympic Conference thing. I just wish there was a way that local teams could play one another. Yeah. That's all I care about. Like I like the Prairie Land Conference junior high six teams. I think there's a lot of similarities. And most of those other sports, you don't need that conference affiliation because, you know, Mercer County can play Sherrard in every other sport. But football. And I truly believe that football, in my opinion, needs everything in its arsenal to sustain itself.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think one of the things is local rivalries.
Absolutely.
Now, that's not everything, but I'm saying there's a lot of different things to me that can turn this, I don't know if you can turn the trend around of eventually getting way more kids out like you did in the 70s, 80s. I don't think that'll ever happen. But just in terms of getting the interest level back up. That's just my opinion on the geographic rivalries and getting communities interested. Because I see, to me, you know, a lot of apathy now today in a lot of these games because people, like you say, don't know who you're playing. And I'm not talking about just as it relates to Sherrard. I'm talking about a lot of people that are saying, well, why? The question is always, why can't we do this?
Yeah, and those local rivalries are huge. I playing Alwood in anything was a big deal when I was in high school. Going over to Alexis was a big deal. Cambridge wasn't that far. And so the whole community,
that's the thing where the consolidations, the school reorganizations, and the co-ops, because there's so many of them that are occurring, it's impacted all of these conferences. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons that a lot of these local geographic rivalries don't occur anymore. And that's the sad part of it.
It is. The reality of it. The reality is that we were at 280, 300, 320, whatever we were when I was in school, and Sherrard had to have been in the 500s then. So now you put the two districts together and we're at 460. And that's the reality of the area. Our population throughout Illinois has dropped. Mm-hmm. And we were talking off air about 8-man football. If 8-man football would keep those geographic rivalries, I'm in. You know, because there's something special about those Friday nights when border towns, districts are playing each other. That's a whole different deal than traveling an hour and a half, 2 hours away.
Yeah, and I think Sherrard is at more of the disadvantage now because of how the alignment is for football. Is you are fortunate if you can get the crossovers that you need because you're on the side that features, you know, Princeton, St. Bede, Monmouth-Roseville, which is, I think, a decent enough rivalry from back in the Olympic Conference days. Spring Valley Hall, really, no connection. I'm not disrespecting those schools.
Sure.
I said Princeton, you know. And that's where, and even in the crossovers, you hope that you can get Orion and Rock Ridge every year. Well, you get Rock Ridge back next year, but you don't get Orion.
Yeah.
Now, a couple of people say, well, why would Sherrard want to play Orion? Orion's on this tremendous run.
Yeah.
They want to play because yes. they're geographic rivalries, and the kids at the school know Orion. And by the way, they co-op soccer.
Absolutely.
So you think they would play one another then in every other sport. So that's my opinion. And from even that standpoint, when I hear some Orion people say, well, why would they want to play us? They've had some down. Well, because the people are interested in that game. Because I think Applegate told me, was it a year ago, you guys hosted Orion. And that was the biggest gate in like 5 years you had.
And I was...
Because people know Sherrard
exactly.
Orion.
Exactly. I was, oddly enough, watching our game, watching the film of our game with Orion this year. And it's, of course, shot from the press box side at the Orion. And so you could see our fans. And we had a nice following that night. You know, now not so much maybe in the fourth quarter as the first, but we had a nice following that night. And it is that interest in the local rivalries that brought many of those people there.
Yeah, and I was telling you about last year. I've said this story a few times before, but Sherrard was playing at St. Bede in football. I mean, it was a Friday night game, and they have two radio crews that do their home games there. And I was set up in between them, and the one guy goes, mind you, this is a conference game in the Three Rivers, Mississippi. He said, he's like, what's Sherrard's nickname?
Yeah.
And I'm like, ladies and gentlemen, that's conference football
there,
2017.
Yes, sir.
So anyway, all right. So yeah, we can always talk about those issues. But I wanted to bring up another thing too. We talk about culture, and you brought up eight man. And I think for a lot of schools, if you want to save football, schools seriously need to explore that. I'm not saying Sherrard's in that boat or any of the Three River schools or whatever, but, I mean, it's something that's out there, and if it's going to keep the sport alive in some format, then I think schools need to seriously consider looking at that. It's still football. It's just basically you have three linemen instead of five. And that's basically the difference of it. If you want to run midline veer with that, do it. If you want to run the spread with it, you can still do it. And, again, they're having the eight-man state final at Monmouth College. I believe it's on November the 9th. But in terms of kids going out, you know, that's the other issue for all schools, not just Sherrard, basically everywhere. You're lucky if you get 50, you feel good.
Absolutely.
So... what I say now, and this, it doesn't just relate to Sherrard, but like, you know, I think there's, football is a sport, definitely, where if you're a kid and maybe you didn't play your freshman or sophomore year, or maybe you played your freshman year, didn't come out sophomore year, I mean, you still can go back out. Your junior year, I think that's a big issue that people need to, our kids and parents need to understand that they can come back out. Now, this is what I'm going to ask you. So, as head football coach now, do I want you, Scott Munson, am I saying steal kids from the golf team? No. If kids play golf and that's their sport, you want them to play golf. And if they play soccer, cool, man. Keep playing soccer. I'm not stealing you from that sport or that activity or golf or whatever the sport is in the fall. I'm saying that if you played before and you think, maybe I'd like to go out now. Can a kid do that?
Oh, absolutely.
And why should they do that?
Yeah, absolutely. And again,
and I'm not talking about just at Sherrard. I'm talking about any school that's listening in the area.
Anywhere. Think about the changes that happen to a young person's body between seventh grade and their junior year. And you have many times a young person. This is why I'm not a huge fan of everything that goes with youth football. You can have a really bad experience in fifth, sixth, and seventh grade because you weigh 30 pounds less than everybody else.
And that's well documented, I think, in a lot of places, everywhere.
So you walk away and you try something else, and then all of a sudden you have this growth spurt, and all you're one of the bigger kids, or you filled out in some way, shape, or form, and now you want to try it again. The great thing about football, there are all different types of roles that need to be filled. And it's incumbent that I think good football coaches can find a role for you to fill. And that was one of my great experiences of coaching with the elders. I think that's what made them make them great coaches. They were excellent at making out specialists. This, we're going to create this role and this is all you've got to do. And I can think of during their time at Sherrard, they did a great job of finding kids and that perhaps couldn't have competed in any other sport and made them excel in one area. And so those positions are out there. And you just, as a coach, have got to find and create little specialists all over and allow them to do that. And we've had some great stories of kids. We've certainly had some great stories this year. D'Angelo Moody, who never played in his life, returns a kick against St. Bede for a touchdown. Should have had one against Kewaunee.
And that officiating crew still has not signaled that call. That penalty
still
was.
Have not.
I remember asking your spotter that night, I'm like, do you know what the penalty was? And he goes, no, I don't know what it was. I just know they're spotting the ball back at the 25 or whatever.
And then Bryce Davis is another example who had a similar experience, was placed inexplicably on the line as a young person. And decided that wasn't for him. And so he comes out this year and had a great year. Probably is going to get some mention and postseason awards.
Well, he did have a good year. And that kid took some freaking major hits, and he hung on to the ball. That's what I was impressed about him.
Yeah, here's a young man who played for several years. He's coming across the middle, catching the ball, all 140 pounds of him. So it's happening. It's doable. And, you know, like I said, we don't want to steal anybody from any other sport.
Yeah, and that's what my message is to anybody. I'm not saying, steal that kid from that kid or what. I'm just saying if you're a kid and you're thinking about it or you've played before, you could – this is a sport that I say, you know, a lot of people say, well, football is on trial, but I think it's very important to note that the way the game, in my opinion, has to adapt is, I'm not saying you have to be more friendly, I don't think I'm using that term, but you have to have more open arms and say, well, yeah, I understand you didn't play your freshman or sophomore year, well, you disrespect us, you ain't never coming out.
Yeah.
You'll never play on this team.
Yeah.
You can't be that way.
No.
But I'm saying once you commit, you got to be a part of the thing. I'm just saying that now, today, you don't have to be in a program. You can't expect kids sometimes in this sport to be in the program for 4 years. And you as a coach, I'm saying, and I'm not speaking as you specifically, I'm talking about anybody, you have to be willing to say, well, I was mad that kid didn't go out his freshman year or sophomore year, but he's willing to come back out his junior year for whatever reason. And you got to say, well, yes, I'm gonna take you back, but here's the rules again. Once you sign up, you're rowing the boat with us, and
absolutely,
you're part of the program, and you're going to practice every day, and you're expected to do all the other things the other kids do.
Yeah, and I think and the two young men that I mentioned did not expect anything special treatment. They came in and they were in the weight room in the off season all spring long, all summer long. They did everything we asked, and they understood that this was the deal, and they bought in. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was really nice to see their progress.
Absolutely.
This year, because I look at the kids that are coming back, and I think that those two kids you mentioned have a chance to play a really significant role next year. So we're talking with Scott Munson this morning, the head football coach at Sherrard. We still have plenty more of conversation coming up on WRMJ and WRMJ.com. All right, Jim Taylor back on the WRMJ Sports Line on this Saturday morning. Pleased to have Scott Munson, the head football coach of Sherrard, with us. And how long had you been an assistant before becoming head coach, remember?
Yeah, I think my first year was – I did 2 years in junior high, 95, 96, and then 97 was my first in high school.
So over 20 years of being an assistant before getting the head coaching job, or about basically 20 years.
Yes.
So what – like I've always wondered, what are the advantages or disadvantages, or maybe there's both, to waiting 20 years to get your first head coaching gig?
Well, my path is the most circuitous path possible to be a head coach. I mean, I started coaching when I was 30, and then got an education 15 years later. So, you know, if you want to talk about a strange, you know, long, strange path it's been, that's it. In terms of advantage, I mean, I have some experiences. I worked as a manager at a juvenile detention center. I had managed people. I managed budgets. I had done those things outside of sports. And so that has come into been very valuable here as I become a head coach. And then through 20 years, I went through five. I had the opportunity to work under five different head coaches, and
so that would have started with who?
Jeff Lindmark. Yeah.
And then that transitioned to Elder.
Yep, Pat Lynn, Elder. And then Kirby, and so then Kirby. Brett Lee. And then B.A., Brian Adams, yeah. So each one of those.
Pretty good dudes, man.
We have some great guys, and but also some very different philosophies in terms of offense, defense,
and
practice, and a whole bunch of different personalities. And, so it's been a unique experience. I learned a whole bunch and taken some things from everybody, and I have a new newfound respect for each and every one of them. Over these last 2 years, and because there's sometimes as an assistant, you're going, why are you doing that? And over the last 2 years, I was like, oh, okay, that's why they did it. Here are some things I didn't know at the time. And, it's kind of like being becoming a parent. You're never really, really ready until you got the kid and you got to, learn in a hurry. And it was the same way as head coach. I 20 years as an assistant still didn't prepare me for some of the things that I have run into and some of the things I'm going to run into in the future, I'm sure.
What is the biggest challenge you think in coaching football?
Is it because
you hear like most of the issues that football is dealing with? I wouldn't say it's a positive issue; it's a negative issue. Whether it's like, well, there's how are they dealing with concussion protocol? Are they doing too much in the off season? It's those type of issues. Our football wants to dominate every sports culture in this specific school. So you got to balance like all of those type of things. So as a football coach, what do you think the toughest
thing I think is? The toughest part is that any number of things can rise up as the main issue every year. So 1 year it may be player retention, next recruitment, then you may have some bizarre off-field issue that you have to address. And rarely is it an X's and O's thing. I think
that's amazing.
One of the things that as new young coaches come in, I think we all think we've got the answer. That somehow we have learned something X's and O's that nobody else knows.
Because every issue, because we're all fans at heart.
Yeah.
So when we're fans, you're always on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
And so you can watch whatever game on a Friday night, high school football, and say, what in the world are they doing? Or you can watch Illinois on Saturday afternoon and say, where does Lovie have the safety at? Why is he open all the time? Type of issues. Well, if you're not – I had a superintendent tell me one time. He's like, Jim, there's two views in life. And I said, well, what's that? He said, from the inside looking out.
Yeah.
And the outside looking in. He goes, do you think they're the same?
Yeah.
He goes, no, a lot more enjoyable from the outside and a lot easier from the outside looking in.
You get questions all the time. Well, why didn't you give the ball to so-and-so more? Well, he missed 2 days of practice, exactly. Or he had an issue in class. And those are things you can't necessarily say on the radio.
He's being a big idiot.
Exactly. He's acting like a 16-year-old boy, and so, or his girlfriend broke up with him, and so those are the things that you can't plan for, and they just pop up. And we had some kind of strange, quote-unquote personnel issues pop up this year that I hadn't run into before. It's always good in the off season to go talk to other coaches and they start hearing their stories. It makes you feel a little bit better. So, I guess to answer your question directly, it's something different every year.
Well, and you mentioned and football is such a quantity issue, and you need quality, but it's a numbers issue because you need. Well, 11 men on the field at 11, no, I should say 11 members of a team on the field to play. And that's just to play one side of the ball. So that, player retention will always be a big issue. And I always tell people that when your number's challenged and there's just one
domino that falls in one position, and if that position is a key player, because you know if you have 23 varsity players, you're like, please, football God, let them be spread out perfectly.
Exactly.
Where I have, you know, 14 linemen or and mm-hmm. 9 skill players mm-hmm. or whatever. Well, this year I got 5.
Exactly.
I got 5 linemen.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you're dealing with, I guess you're dealing with the quantity, but the equation.
Yeah.
And I think the equation is probably more important.
Yeah.
And then if you have the one domino that falls in the area where you're short of numbers, well, then I got to play this kid, and he's got to get a different jersey number, and he's not going to be happy.
Yeah.
But this is the impact of – it has a huge, like, domino impact.
Yeah. And
when you're dealing with low numbers.
Absolutely. And I – we were going, and I don't know if it was you and I that spoke or if I was talking to somebody else, but we were going into a game with 5 linemen. And somebody said, well, what happens if one of them get hurt? And I don't know. I got a plan B, but I certainly don't have a C. You know, so if 2 of them go, we're really in trouble. And but it would have involved taking the number 65, I think it was, out of the bag and having somebody with a receiver number taking it off and playing a position never played before.
Well, and just as we get into the specifics of the season, I thought this group had a pretty good 9 weeks in terms of effort.
Oh, no,
that they really
absolutely
they gave it, and I thought that truly indicative for me was in the fourth quarter against Spring Valley Hall, because I know the other thing that's deceiving to do when you look at box scores and you can say, oh, look at Sherrard, they got rolled again. Well, I really believe that game was one of those games a little bit deceiving that you didn't get rolled. I think they had a couple of big plays and you were able to move the ball into their end of the territory more than a few in their territory more than a few times that Friday night at Hall, but just couldn't finish
yes.
the drive.
Yeah, and regarding the effort thing, no doubt about it. These guys, I thought there was not a game this year where I felt we phoned it in. And I can't last year I thought we went over to Monmouth last year and I don't think ever really showed up. We were pretty flat over at Erie Prophetstown in the 17 year also. And this year I never questioned the effort. Never questioned effort in terms of practice or commitment. So you really can't ask for much more than that. And, you know, speaking of the Hall game, and I think I said this after the game, they've got some really fast dudes,
yeah.
You know, and so some of those plays initially you can say, okay, we need to move somebody from the outside technique to inside and hopefully positive things will happen. But there was a couple times there wasn't much running room there. We just didn't have somebody that could respond to them. And so those 3-yard gains become, you know, 73-yard
yeah.
gains.
Yeah, and we were talking about kids going out, you know, deciding to come out or not go out. Hall has a really interesting story this year in their quarterback who they got to go out midway through the season because they had a great athlete quarterback that got hurt, I think, week 3 or week 4, something like that.
Pretty early.
And yeah, I think he's going to come back in the postseason.
Good.
Maybe if they move along. I can't remember what Coach Tiemann indicated, but he's on a path to come back maybe.
That'd be good.
So they get this kid. Jimmy D'Angelo is his name. I mean, it sounds like a movie. So they get him to come out, and he gets enough practices to play week 8, I think.
And
was his first week.
And you should mention that he's 6'4",
yeah,
210.
Yeah, I was okay. So Heath and I are there, and I'm like, yeah, I said, they got the kid to go out and play quarterback. And so I was looking, taking game notes down, and I said, you know, 6'4", 190. And then the coach goes, well, he pitched the state championship in the baseball game. I'm like, oh, so we're watching the kid warm up, and basically just flicking his wrist and throwing the ball like 60 yards downfield. I'm like, where do you get these kids at? I mean, you could tell his timing wasn't there yet.
Yes.
But I mean, if he has a, and he's a senior, but that's what I'm saying. There's those stories that if there's some kids out there that you can.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, when we talk about the culture of football, it was, well, if you ain't playing with us, this is our team. Well, you can't be that way anymore. You have to go
yeah.
and ask kids now, you would you like to play football?
Yeah.
I think you'd be good at the sport. You have to kind of take that
yeah.
approach to kids now. Would you, you know, back in the day, You couldn't be that way.
Oh, I can remember
and
coaches.
And that's a tough culture change for a lot of guys in the sport.
I can remember coaches saying, I'm not going to beg anybody to go out. Well, you know, I'm not going to beg anybody either.
But
you need to talk to folks. Kyle Mize, you remember, as a basketball player, came out his senior year, hadn't played since junior high. And John Elder always talked about what great feet he had about what a find he was, and he was. It was a huge pickup, and he thought he had an opportunity to go play some small college football if Kyle had wanted to. And certainly Bryce was a great example. I think Bryce and D'Angelo joining us had a lot to do with Coach Hutton, and Coach Hutton kind of pushing him that way. And then our offense coordinator, Nick Welch, may have been a salesman in a previous life because I think he's the one that really closed the deal and got him out. And so, you've got to keep the door open. And as soon as I see a 6'4", 210-pound kid wandering the halls of Sherrard, I'm going to go get him for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, football, in my opinion now, needs more help than any sport in terms of because I always hear in this multi-sport debate about the culture today of other coaches saying, well, I'll work with your schedule to make sure kids will be multi-sport athletes. But I don't hear enough of saying this coach saying, well, I'll get this kid to go out for that sport.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
It's
just work. No, I need you not only to work with the schedule, but I'd like you to get some of your kids that are playing this sport. Just think about playing maybe another sport. Like, you don't have to say you have to play that other sport. No, just say, but I think you would be well served to also give that sport a try.
We have gotten so caught up in this specialization and specializing early and I had an example run through my mind, but I'd probably best not to mention it, and because it's in all sports.
Every
sport is doing it now, and so when you talk about numbers, you know, the coaches have got to push not only staying away from specialization. The best thing for any athlete to do is be involved in other sports, at least one other, hopefully two others. We can make the rest work, but if you can compete and go out and being part of a team is a huge part of helping any sport. And so we encourage them. I'm happy to say that we'd have just a handful of young people that aren't going to be involved in a winter sport, be it basketball or wrestling. We've got a personal conditioning class, and if you count the personal conditioning, football and basketball, we have five guys on the roster, 9 through 12, that aren't involved in that. So that's a good positive.
Yeah, and we were getting back to effort. I thought it was really great. You know, we're talking about week 9, those seniors. You know, like, I mean, I'm not going to name every one of them, but how they played week 9, and even in the fourth quarter, that they knew this was it.
Yeah.
And even though they're down and the clock's rolling, hey, I enjoyed playing, and I'm going to continue to play till the final whistle. That, to me, says that they bought in.
Yeah.
That they believe what's going on is headed in the right direction. I think that's a testament to what they're doing. I hope people are seeing that, and I know people that long for the days of the 80s and 90s. I think we all do.
Yeah.
But sometimes it would be nice to have some of the level of talent in the 80s and 90s, too.
Sure.
You know? But you can't underestimate the effort that the kids have given either. But still, you need quantity, you need effort, and you need quality. And you don't get that every year.
Yeah. And I think you start looking at the playoff teams right now, and there are some teams that are in. They're 9-0, 8-1, and they have a ton of talent. But you also have some of those programs who actually are down a little bit in talent this year, and they're getting in at 5-4, 6-3, and that's where you want to be. That the talent level at schools our size are going to kind of ebb and flow. But if you create, and I hate to use the term because it's so overused right now, but if you create that culture, the playoffs become the norm rather than the exception, and you get through those lean years to kind of bridge into the next talented class or classes, and that's the goal.
Yeah, and again, I just want to make sure the senior class hears me that I really appreciate their effort this year, and I saw them.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure they are well aware. I saw them, and I thought one of the great moments early in the fourth quarter is when you had a defense offense, which the Gagliardo kid, I've sent his name 27 different times this year, Grant. he comes running onto the field, you know.
Yes.
Clapping the hands like, yep. I'm in this to the end. I see those type of things, and I say that's
yeah
why I enjoy doing games, covering programs like this.
Yeah.
And that means much more to me than some of the other things that happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
And one of the other things you mentioned in the pregame once was the comment that I believe it was the Erie Prophetstown coach who mentioned about how the sideline was
engaged. He noticed that on the film. That's the other big thing.
Yeah.
And that is, I'm glad you brought that up because he said that. I said, what do you notice about Girard? He goes, well, their kids seem to be engaged into the game,
yeah.
And I don't see that a lot of other places. But, you know, the JV team had a competitive year.
Yes.
And so there's a nice kind of nucleus coming back. You still need some pieces to fill in next year. And I think there's some kids maybe walking that building that aren't mm-hmm. playing the sport in the fall they should consider.
Just sure.
Not, you don't have to go out, but just think about it a little bit and say, maybe could they use me? Talk to the coach and say, hey, you think I should go out and see what happens? Your crossovers next year are Riverdale, Morrison, and you open up with Rock Ridge, so a lot to get excited about with August 30th game
yeah.
at Clifford Kingfield. That's a nice way to bring in some excitement to the season, that's for sure.
I think so. That should be a fun atmosphere that night. We went over to Rock Ridge and played a kind of a friendly 7-on-7, and so it was fun to see Coach Graves and talk with the members of the staff there. And I kind of lost track of some of their kids. You know some of the names, and you get to see them up close and out on the field. So that was fun. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that. That'll be a great way to start the season.
Yeah, and so it'll be the first time in, well, it'll be 4 years. We haven't played them for 4 years.
Yeah.
So officially the first time in 5 years.
Yeah.
You'll play them. And, you know, a kid like Kyle Yater had such an outstanding year at the quarterback and is a really gifted
mm-hmm.
Multi-sport athlete. So, I think the expectations, I'm not going to say got to play week 10, but, I think the kids should be thinking about that.
And I think they are.
I think they are. There's some personnel that is there that they should expect, hey, we can compete. We should be able to compete most Friday nights.
And I think there is, some, as I said earlier, some excitement that has been established here. Now, learning what it takes to get there and taking the next step. And we had voted for and already have chosen our captains for next year. I met with those three and talked a little bit about, all right, what do we need to do between now and then? And so we have started those conversations, and you want to keep that seed planted and kind of fertilized through the off season as we kind of go our separate ways so that we can pick up when we all come back together.
Yeah, and I think, too, the other thing is that we talked a lot about equation and buy-in and all that, you know, not only from the kids, but everybody has to buy in. And, you know, we talk about short-term turnaround, a lot of people like that, and you have, I mean, it's just the way the coaching profession is. Well, we need these results at this time, and I mean, it does, and it's, I guess, how do you deal with those type of things? Because the people won't let you have the calendar, per se, that they mm-hmm. want the net, they can't see the gains. The only way they're going to get the gains is if you get into the playoffs. See what I'm saying?
Yes. That
a lot of people will say 2-7 in year two is not enough.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you still have to work against that element.
Absolutely.
And kids can hear that.
Absolutely.
And other parents can hear that. So how do you deal with – I think that's a big challenge that you have to deal with. And a lot of people always say, well, you know, man, we were good in the 80s and 90s. Why ain't we good in
yeah.
the – 2018 got to be the coaching.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so you know, I don't spend a whole lot of time on social media during the season, you know, and you know that is out there. That noise is going to be out there all the time. And I attempt to do what I tell the kids to do, control the controllables. There are some things that we can control. And so we can control how well prepared we are from week to week. We can control how well we scout, how well we coach, how well we prepare. But I can't control how good St. Bede's going to be next year or Morrison's going to be next year. So we have to focus on us and do the best we can with those elements. And then, you know, if Prue gets St. Bede gets you know, some amazing Division One transfer that comes in, well, you know, we'll have to do the best we can with that. But we're going to be better than we were last year is the goal, because that's what we can control.
All right. Well, Coach, appreciate the help all season long. 2018 was a fun year, and really looking forward to 2019 as we kick off August 30th. It'll be here before you know it.
Yeah, that it will be. Thanks, Jim. We appreciate having you and all the work you guys do over here at WRMJ.
All right, Scott Munson with us on a Saturday morning. That will wrap it up on WRMJ.
Most people understand the need for life insurance, but not many want to talk about why it's essential to your financial plan. It may seem intimidating.